Irreverent, entertaining, cool. You're listening to LA Talk Radio.
You're listening to Answers for the Family with Alan Cardoza, right here on LA Talk Radio.
Greetings to all of you listening around the world, and a warm welcome as we bring you another edition of the Answers for the Family radio show. I'm your host, Alan Cardoza, and if you're a regular listener, I want to take this time to thank you once again for joining us. And if this is your first time, please make yourself at home, relax, as we bring you Answers for the Family. Now, each week, this show will address issues such as locating a runaway teen, family crisis intervention, building self-esteem, dealing with addictions, lasting health, and so much more. Now, having over 30 years' experience working with families in crisis, I've been fortunate to meet and work with some of the top professionals in many of the helping fields and skilled authors who are working to make this world a better place for all of us. Now, you can all do me a big favor, so please check out some of our past shows at AnswersForTheFamily.com to hear some informative and entertaining guests, as well as dynamic co-hosts, as they discuss ways for you and your loved ones to become happier, healthier, and more at peace. Now, I'm also looking for some show ambassadors who will forward at least one of our shows to your social media group or someone you know that can benefit from a particular subject. I want you to know that I truly appreciate it, and this is just another way that we, together, can make a positive difference in the lives of others. Now, one of the things that I know that many people have grown accustomed to hearing, and that is starting off the show with, where in the world is Gabriella? Well, for those that have been following, you may know that 2 weeks ago, Gabriella, who is our kindness expert, was taking care of her elderly father in the south of France. Now, this week, Gabriella is in Brittany, France, at a hospice, where she sat with her father and best friend as he took his last breath. So she told me that she won't be joining us on the show today. She will be back next week. But she wants everybody to know that she sends her positive thoughts of kindness to all of you. And I'm sure that we can all send her our thoughts, our strength, and our prayers. So now, I want to touch on that a little bit before we go to our guest, and that is that, you know, if it, doing acts of kindness or even talking about acts of kindness and gratitude, it wires our brain to recognize kindness better, and it ultimately helps us feel better, not just the person that you're doing that act of kindness for, but it helps us. So one of the things that I think that we can all do, and we can do it in honor of Gabriella, we can do it in honor of her father, do it in honor of someone that you know, that you love, that you miss. Go out today and do an act of kindness to someone close to you and see how it not only makes them feel, but how it makes you feel as well. Now, if you want to get involved in this and do it with many, many other people that are joining the movement, go to the daretobekindmovement.global website. Join in and see what other people are doing around the world. This is how we can make a difference. And that's the key right now. And I think more than any other time, this is a time in which, you know, we all need to focus on the positive. We need to focus on acts of kindness and the things that we can do to help each other. Now, this is going to fit perfectly with our guest today, because that's one of the things that she does, and she does it using animals. So our guest today is Ellie Lax, and she is the founder of the Gentle Barn Foundation, which is a national nonprofit organization that rescues and rehabilitates unwanted animals. But more than that, it heals people with the same stories of abuse and neglect. She is a celebrated animal welfare advocate, humane educator, and the author of My Gentle Barn, creating a sanctuary where animals heal and children learn to hope. So Ellie founded the Gentle Barn in 1999. She created her own gentle healing method that allows old or sick or injured and sometimes terrified animals to fully recover using a combination of Western medicine, holistic modalities, what she refers to as holding therapy, which I call hugging therapy, and lots of love. Now, in her work, The Gentle Barn, Ellie has hosted hundreds of thousands of visitors and developed programs for at-risk, underprivileged, and intellectually or developmentally disabled children. The rescued animals at The Gentle Barn also act as ambassadors of kindness and compassion for groups of war veterans, senior citizens, domestic abuse survivors, and those in recovery from addiction or having been abused in a gang affiliation. She is a highly effective and charismatic public speaker whose message motivates audiences towards higher awareness, profound compassion, realizing dreams, and developing an enhanced sense of purpose. To date, Ellie has saved hundreds of animals and hosted over 500,000 guests. Now, the Gentle Barn is currently home to approximately 200 animals and grown to include locations near Los Angeles, California, Nashville, Tennessee, and St. Louis, Missouri. Her goal is to open up Gentle Barns in every state so that everyone in America can have the opportunity to hug a cow, cuddle with a turkey, or even give a pig a tummy rub. So, Ellie, with that, welcome to Answers for the Family.
Thank you so much. Such an honor to be here.
Well, it is my pleasure. And, you know, having done this show now for 10 years, we have focused on providing a platform for people like yourself who are doing extraordinary things to make a positive difference in the lives of others. And having worked with some at-risk youth programs in other states that focus on using animals to be able to help get through to some people that have gone through, in some cases, some very horrific times, and using, for instance, like equine therapy and things to be able to help, I think is just beautiful. I mean, there are kids that may not feel comfortable to open up to another adult after having gone through a very difficult experience, but yet they seem to be able to bond with an animal. So I guess to start with, why is that? You know, what is that piece that allows some people to be able to bond with an animal when they're not yet ready to bond with another human being?
God, animals bring so much to the table. I mean, first of all, they're not judging us or criticizing us, so we feel less self-conscious with them. A lot of times with our human families or human circles, we have to measure up. We have to get good grades, or we have to have a good career, or we have to have money or be accomplished. Like, there's so many criteria that we have to meet in order to get approval sometimes from other people. We have to behave a certain way. We have to please others. But with animals, we can be 100% purely ourselves and get their positive feedback and their admiration. So it's a really safe space. They love us unconditionally. But mostly, I think that when we're around animals, and this is true for myself anyway, when I'm around an animal, yes, they're loving me unconditionally. They're not judging me. It's a safe space. But more than that, they're connecting me back to the love inside myself. So I feel like a good person when I'm with them. I feel loving. I feel happy. I feel kind. I feel like a good person because I'm connected to the love inside of me. Mm-hmm. And I think that that's what they do for people. They remind us of who we are, that we're good, that we're loved.
You know, first of all, that's beautiful. But share a little bit with some of the people that may not fully understand how horses or other prey animals are able to read humans' intentions and help those of us that, you know, that have been hurt or are suffering, and why, because they're prey animals, they they intuitively have this ability.
Well, you know, you mentioned horses. The one thing about horses in particular and donkeys, all animals, but really horses and donkeys particularly, is they, in order to stay alive, as you mentioned, they're prey animals, they have to be very in a situation.
Okay, I'm not sure if it was just me, but I think we've had a bit of a technical difficulty. So, Ronan, our engineer, if you can tell me what has just happened, but I think we have lost the guest, although my board shows that they're still on.
Hello?
Yes, okay. We're back, and I don't know exactly what happened, but I think we lost you for a little bit, or at least I did on this end.
I'm so sorry. I could still hear you. Sorry about that.
Okay. But again, so I think where at least it started to break up a little bit was you were talking a little bit about, you know, why prey animals, because of their abilities in the wild, makes them more intuitive or have better abilities to be able to read humans.
Yeah. So prey animals, their job every day is to stay alive. And so when there's a rustling in the bushes or they see something far away or someone's near them, they have the very, very quick ability to read the situation, trust their instincts, and know what to do in a millisecond in order to stay alive. And so they bring that ability to us. Mm-hmm. So when we're with horses and donkeys, for example, in a millisecond, they know if we're being authentic or not, if we're kind or aggressive. They're gauging us. They're wondering if they're safe in our presence. And it's so powerful when we use the interaction with horses and donkeys with people that are struggling. Because if they're inauthentic, if they're acting cool and tough, if they're messing around, the animal is not going to respond to them at all. They're going to want to go away from them. But if they're authentic, if their hearts are open, if they're holding their body language in a way that suggests that they're safe and soothing, that animal is going to want to be in their company. So they immediately get a mirror as to whether they're wanted or not. And they can adjust their body language, the tone of their voice. They can adjust their inauthenticity to become something that the horse or donkey does want to be around. And so it's so useful. I mean, I remember working with this one young man who was trying to get away from his past gang life. And he, in order to survive his neighborhood and the gangs around him, he had to always act tough and cool and inauthentic and kind of mess around, be the class clown, if you will, mm-hmm. hiding his feelings deep inside so nobody saw the raw, vulnerable part of him. And we partnered him with our horse, Caesar, who had actually been used in the film industry. And Caesar, they only wanted him to do what he was told. They didn't care what he thought or what he felt. They didn't care about his personality. They just wanted him to do what he was told. So in that set of circumstances, Caesar kind of became very fake and cool and hid who he really was because nobody cared. And the two of them made such an excellent team at the Gentle Barn, where this boy for the first time went to be around Caesar, and he was acting tough and cool, and Caesar was backing away from him, shying away from him, not wanting to be with him. And when I pointed that out and said that Caesar was sizing him up and wondering if he was safe and what could he do with his body language to become safe, he immediately quieted his body language. He quieted the tone of his voice. The other boys were working on their other horses. So in the privacy of that moment, he actually became very, very authentic and still and quiet and started connecting with Caesar. And in that moment, Caesar was able to be authentic and raw and open as well, while the two of them really bonded. And it was a beautiful, beautiful moment. And I was able to give them about 15 minutes to really bond in that quiet, sweet, vulnerable, raw spot. And then after 15 minutes, I went up to him and I said, in this moment right now, what word would you use to describe who you are? And he thought about it for a few minutes, and then he looked up at me with tears in his eyes and said, gentle. Mm. And I said, and I reached out my hand to him and I said, it's really nice to meet you. This is who you are. And I understand because of your life circumstances, you've had to hide that. But it is so beautiful to see. And it's such an honor to have you here. And I shook his hand and I said, it was so nice to meet him. Tears were streaming down his face because he had never had the safety, the opportunity to be who he really is. And through the remainder of our program, for the rest of the year, that boy was never tough or cool or inauthentic again. He always hugged me hello and hugged me goodbye. He was generous and loving to all the other kids. He was always very safe and trustworthy with the animals. And in that space, his authentic, true nature was allowed to emerge because of a horse that saw him and helped the best of him come out.
I'm so glad that you shared that story, because that's exactly, you know, one of the incredible values that is offered by these animals. And for a young person who may have never felt that they could allow themselves to show themselves as being vulnerable or being authentic because it would be used against them. And to have this, huge animal allow him to see that it's safe. It was safe to be who he really was. I think there's just so much growth that comes in that. And again, I hope that all the parents out there recognize that, when you can have this kind of experience for your child, it's going to help them to become, you know, the true, authentic, and wonderful young people that they are. So again, thank you. Now, in regards to yourself, now, and I know having been able to read the book and stuff that you know, you grew up loving animals, but in your family couldn't really understand your empathy for, I guess, what they described as disposable pets. So can you share a little bit with us about your early experiences with animals?
Yeah, absolutely. So there were two things going on in my childhood. One is there was some abuse going on that was causing me tremendous pain. And I always resorted to nature and animals to heal that. The other thing that was going on is the more I resorted to nature and animals, the more I felt like I did not fit in with my peers. The kids in my class, my community, my friends, they didn't understand why I loved animals so much. And the kids at school teased me for it. My brothers would torture bugs in front of me to make me cry. They thought it was funny. And my parents kept telling me, don't be ridiculous. So my pain drove me to animals. The more I was driven to animals, the more I felt like I didn't fit in with humans. So it was this vicious cycle that led to me feeling very lonely. And it was always animals that saved me and healed me. It was always animals that listened to me while I cried and didn't make me feel silly for it. It was always animals that if I wanted to play or if I wanted to lay down and just watch the sky or if I wanted to build a fort, they were happy to be with me no matter what. They didn't need me to show up in any particular way to be loved by them. They just loved me for who I was. And they reminded me that I was wanted. Mm-hmm. In my absolute worst moments, there were times where I didn't want to be here anymore. And they just time and time again, just saved my life and convinced me to stay. So I know very firsthand that animals are angels among us. They bring so much healing. They teach us about forgiveness and unconditional love. And they remind us of who we really are. So because they saved me, it was kind of natural for me to want to grow up and partner with animals to heal other people.
How did your parents respond as an 11-year-old when you told them that you would never eat animals again?
Well, at first they didn't take me seriously. They were like, "Oh, that's nice, dear. Eat your chicken soup." I was like, "Didn't you just hear me? I'm not going to eat animals." "Well, it's not an animal. It's just soup." And I'm like, "No, I'm not going to eat it." And then they got really scared and thought I was going to die and be anemic and not grow. I'm 51 years old, so I made it.
let's talk a little bit about, how the barn got started. So I believe it's 20 years now. So share a little bit about, how you got to the point to where you decided this is what you're going to do
from now on.
Yeah, so I wanted to open the Gentle Barn since I was 7, but I had no idea how, so I procrastinated for a very long time. And it wasn't until 20 years ago, as a young adult, I was driving in Los Angeles, and I saw a petting zoo I had never seen before. So I went in just to be nosy, and there was so much suffering going on in there. The goats and sheep had overgrown toenails and deformed legs. They were beating the ponies to keep going around in circles. There were dead animals in cages. It was over 100 degrees and nobody had water. And the most disturbing thing about that place was it was full of people and no one could see the suffering right in front of them. And it absolutely baffled me. Not one single person, they were smiling, they were taking pictures, they were posing their kids next to the dilapidated animals. And nobody looked at them and saw their suffering and their deplorable conditions. So it made me very ill, and I had to get out of there as fast as I could. And running for the exit, there was a very old goat blocking my way. And she looked me right in the eye, and she asked me for help. And her body looked terrible. She looked like she was about to drop dead any second. And she stopped me in my tracks. And I'm the kind of person that if someone asks me for help, I find a way to help. I can't turn my back on help needed. So she hit me in my tracks, and I figured, well, I live in a half-acre backyard. I guess I could bring home a goat. So I went to find the owner of the petting zoo and said, hey, can I have that goat? Thinking I was doing her a favor. I mean, the goat wasn't going to survive much longer. And she said no. And I said, well, can I buy her? Name your price. And she said no, and she tried to wave me off. And I knew that if I didn't help that goat, that she's going to die there. So I said, well, I'm going to stay here till you say yes. And I stayed there for 12 days.
Wow.
Finally, on the 13th day, the owner came and found me and said, hey, take the goat and get the heck out of here. So I brought Mary the goat home. I found a veterinarian in the Yellow Pages that came out and removed her tumors and trimmed her overgrown toenails and taught me how to feed her and how to care for her. And a few months later, she was bouncing around my backyard as happy as can be. And it was the greatest feeling I've ever had in my life. I finally, once and for all, realized that's who I was and that's what I'm supposed to do. And I felt connected to my purpose and to who I really was for the very first time in my life. And it was like a drug I had to have more of. Meanwhile, I've been calling authorities on that place to see if they can help make conditions better for the other animals. And they all said there was nothing they can do. So I went back to the petting zoo with a picture of Mary and said, you know, doesn't she look amazing? These are all the things I did for her. I know that you have other animals that are suffering. No questions asked. I'll take them off your hands. And she kind of rolled her eyes and said, fine, and went in the back and started dragging animals out of the back. Animals with broken bones, pneumonia, scared to death, dying. There was a miniature horse. There was some pigs, some chickens, some goats and sheep. And I brought them all home and I fixed them all with a veterinarian, of course. Mm-hmm. And a few months later, I woke up one morning. I looked out my little picture window to a backyard that was now full of animals. And I said, holy cow, I just started my dream. That was 20 years ago.
Wow. We are talking with Ellie Lax. We're talking about the Gentle Barn Foundation. We're going to take a break. When we come back, we're going to talk a little bit about how the Gentle Barn, is about to celebrate its 20th anniversary. And we're going to talk a little bit about some more of the magic that happens there. So stay with us. You are listening to Answers for the Family.
Founded over 30 years ago to meet the needs of families in crisis, Westshield has continually focused on resolving issues that negatively impact families and businesses. Our signature therapeutic transportation service helps to ensure that adolescents in crisis are safely transported to specialized schools, programs, and treatment centers with unsurpassed experience and success. We are supported by our full-service, licensed investigation agency that has legally, professionally, and compassionately located hundreds of runaways and teens. We are experienced and qualified to help, offering solutions which may include referrals to our international network of top professionals in the fields of educational consulting, psychology, psychiatry, and investigations. Simply put, West Shield Adolescent Services and West Shield Investigations are the best solutions when your family is facing a personal crisis. Call 1-800-899-8585, 24 hours a day, 7 days a week. That's 1-800-899-8585, or visit our website at westshield.com. Thank you.
And we're back. You're listening to Answers for the Family, and we are talking with Ellie Lacks, and we are talking about the Gentle Barn Foundation, as well as her book entitled The Gentle Barn, Creating a Sanctuary Where Animals Heal and Children Learn to Hope. So, Ellie, share with us a little bit about the 20th anniversary celebration and just some of the magic that happens and that you get to see on a daily basis.
Yes, absolutely. I am thrilled to be approaching our 20th anniversary. You know, so much has happened, but it went by in a blink. And it's so exciting to look back and think of all the rescues we did in all the different states and all the animals that we've rescued and all the children that we've had here and the lives that we've changed. Being at the Gentle Barn is like watching miracles every single day. And it never gets old. It's always like a fresh new miracle every time. I remember we had a turkey that loved music. we took her to an event. Her name was Chloe, and she loved music, and she loved people. And we took her to an event where there was a band playing. And instead of staying at our booth with us, every time we turned our backs, she would sprint across the field and run to the stage. And she would plant herself front row center and close her eyes and start swaying for the music. And I've never seen anything like that before. So when we brought her home that day, we put a radio in the barnyard. And no matter where that radio was, whether it was playing jazz or classical or rock, it didn't matter. She was right next to the radio with her eyes closed, swaying to the music. Shortly after that happened, we got a group of teenagers in high school with special needs, and all ranging and varying. Mm-hmm. And one of the girls was blind, and she was known to have fits of rage in the classroom and at home. And she also was a selective mute, so she had not spoken one single word for 12 years. And the first time I met her, I brought a chicken over to all the kids to meet, and everybody took turns holding the chicken or petting the chicken. And when I got over to this one particular girl, they were all saying, no, she can't hold the chicken. She's too dangerous. She's too angry. She's going to act out on the chicken. And I heard their words, and I'm sure that they were right in their experience, but the girl had such a sweet, soft face that, I just, you know, the rule at the Gentle Barn, whether you're human or an animal, when you come into the Gentle Barn, you get to decide for yourself who you are. I don't care what you've done. I don't care what you've been through or gone through. I don't care what people say about you. When the animal or the person is in front of me, they get to define themselves for the first time. So I didn't want to go based on what everyone else had experienced about her. I wanted her to define herself in the Gentle Barn. So I explained that to the counselors. They weren't really convinced, but they said fine. And I let her hold the chicken and pet the chicken. And she had the biggest, most beautiful, radiant smile on her face the entire time. And for the 2 years that she was involved in our program, she hugged cows and she walked horses around and she held chickens and she was always gentle. And it was the only place in her life that she had found peace and happiness and didn't feel angry. So the second year that she entered our program, I really wanted to help her speak. Nobody else had been able to. She had speech therapists and psychologists and you name it, but mm-hmm. in the classroom or at home, no one was able to encourage her to speak. So I wanted to see if we could help. And I remember them saying that before she stopped speaking for the first 4 years of her life, even though she couldn't see because she was blind. She loved to sing and dance, and she was full of joy, and she would just twirl in her room and sing songs, and she was very full of happiness and joy. Well, I mean, I had a turkey that liked music, and I thought maybe there's some common ground there. So one day I told her the whole story of how the turkey loved music, and I invited her to sing to the turkey with me, because I explained to her that the turkey needed music. It was like oxygen to her. So it started off with her sitting by my side, stroking the turkey as I sang out loud. But over about 3 months, she started humming along with me. And then a little bit later than that, she started singing out loud with me. And by the time she graduated our program, she was fully vocal because of a little turkey that loved music. So those are the kinds of miracles that I get to see every day for the last 20 years.
Yeah, there are two, I think, you know, huge and beautiful messages there. And one has to do with putting somebody in a position to help. And I think what I hear you saying and what you did is that you put her in a position as a mentor for the turkey. I mean, you know, to a certain degree, you know, and by doing that and by her feeling that she has that much to give to make a difference in someone or something else, allowed her to not focus on what she's going through, but yet to have that feeling that many of us enjoy when we feel like we're helping somebody else. I mean, I just think that's so beautiful. And the second thing I think has to do with putting a tag on somebody, you know, where, you know, in essence, the other kids that are saying, well, you know, don't do that because she's this, and you saying, essentially, I'm not going to judge. I'm not going to put a tag. Everybody starts here with a clean slate, and they're going to give they're going to have the opportunity to show who they really are. And by allowing her to do that, I think it was just wonderful. So thank you for that.
Thank you. I like what you just said. And it's so true what you said. You know, it's in the giving that we're receiving. Mm-hmm. And yeah, I mean, she got so much because she was helping the turkey have music. Yeah.
And
I love what you just said.
And so incredibly interactive where we're all helping each other. Now, we have a listener question and comment coming in. And again, I want to thank those that take the time. I really appreciate it. I know many people, especially those that say that they're teachers, they're working in the middle of the day, they're working with a class, they can't listen live. But because we send out a sort of a release of sorts that says who's going to be on the show, and we're getting more and more people now that take the time to send in a question ahead of time asking us to ask this on the air so that we can get an answer, and then they're going to listen later either through iTunes or Stitcher or however they choose to listen. So again, I want to thank those that do that. For those of you that are in that situation and you can't listen live, subscribe through iTunes. The show will be sent to you. It'll be waiting for you for whenever you're in a position to where you can choose to listen. Now, this one reads, I greatly admire efforts that bring individuals with physical or psychological conditions in contact with animals. At our community barn, the manager started a program where underprivileged kids can exchange a few hours of work caring for the horses in exchange for riding lessons. The beauty of it is that they are developing a sense of responsibility as well as the skills it takes to care for them properly. Do you also offer work programs like this at your facility? And this is from June A in Sacramento.
Yeah, thanks, Jean. That's a great question. I love that. And yes, we absolutely do. So our program is a 10-month long program. It runs September through June. And the agencies bring their clients once a month for 10 months. And every time they come, we do a different activity. So sometimes we groom the horses and practice our body language and our authenticity. Sometimes we take the horses on hand walks and we're practicing leadership skills. Sometimes we take hikes in nature and we talk about resilience. Other times we're working in the garden. They get to plant the garden. They get to care for the plants. They get to harvest the vegetables and come into our kitchen and make a meal with it. And then during the year, at least once, if not twice or three times, we do projects on the farm. So they'll build a fence, or they'll paint a barn, or they'll do something for an animal so that they can feel when the program ends, they can know, like, I built that fence or I painted that barn and it's there in the community and I'm valuable. I did something for the community that will always be there because of me. So yes, absolutely. And when we get new rescues, they participate in their healing as well. We sit and meditate with the animals, or we'll sing to them, or we'll read aloud to them, and they participate in welcoming them and teaching them to trust humans as well.
Wow. I love that. And again, we've talked about how these animals have helped, you know, a lot of people, how the people have helped the animals, but, describe a little bit about how loving and rescuing animals in your own life led to your own recovery. If you could share a little bit about that.
Yeah. So when I was a kid, I always loved animals and I always felt connected to them. And I always felt like I heard them and they heard me. There was just this language that was understandable for me. When I grew up in, you know, like I said earlier, there was some teasing going on in school. When I hit high school, the teasing became really significant. No one around me understood my connection with animals, and they teased me mercilessly for it. And I was so, at that time, by the time I hit high school, I was so desperate for approval and to fit in and to be quote unquote normal that I actually slammed the door shut to my love affair with animals. And I stopped listening to them and hearing them. I stopped being connected to them. And I started doing what other teenagers were doing, you know, flirting with boys and ditching school and going to the beach and acting promiscuous. And I went down a very, very dark road. It was not a good road for me. It ended up in my 20s leading me to a drug addiction, and to me being in many just abusive, horrible relationships. And in the eye of a storm, in the middle of my drug addiction, I had this epiphany one day where I actually said, this is ridiculous. Like, this isn't life and this isn't death. It's somewhere in between, and I'm just hovering in this useless space. If you hate it here so much, just get it over with. Like, get out of here. You've always kind of wanted to leave. Let's do it. I mean, you know, you're just sitting here doing drugs. You're not really helping anybody anyway. And for the first time, without kind of it being a reactive thing or a dramatic thing or trying to get attention thing, it was really just me sitting in the corner of the room, really thinking about, like, well, if I did end it, how would I do it? And would I leave a note? And where would I do it? And just really thinking about it without sharing it with anybody else, just me, myself. And to my great surprise, in really thinking it through, I realized that I wanted to live. Mm-hmm. And so I then said, well, okay, then how are you going to do that? How are you going to do it better than you've done it before? And I realized that what was always getting in my way was that I was not allowing myself to be who I was. I disallowed my instincts and intuition with animals. I disallowed my connection with them. I tried to be quote unquote normal, and it led me to where I was. So I realized that if I was indeed making the decision to live and to stay, then I had to make the decision to embrace 100% who I was, my connection to animals, my intuition with them, my gifts of healing them, and I had to really walk this life with purpose of who I am. And that, it's so interesting because as a kid, that was what I felt was getting me tormented. But in the end, embracing who I was saved my life. And so I climbed very slowly out of the hole that I had built for myself. And it was animals every step of the way that helped me get to the next step. So I finally realized my childhood dream of rescuing animals and bringing them home and healing them, which ultimately led me to the petting zoo. And now 20 years later, I am clean and sober now. Is it 26 years? The Gentle Barn is now 20 years old. I'm living my dream every single day. And I'm accepted for it worldwide, but the truth is that I don't care if anyone doesn't accept it. I'm going to be who I am, take it or leave it. And that confidence and that self-assuredness helps me walk with my head held high. And hopefully in my work with the children that we work with, I can impart some of that to them, because that, I believe, is the secret to a truly happy life. We've come here with gifts to share with the world. We've come with a song inside of us and a dance to perform. And nobody has the same dance and no one has the same song. And whatever the gift is inside of us, that's what we've come here to share. And when we stop avoiding it or throwing it away or denying it or hating it, and we accept it and share it, that's when we can truly shine and enhance the world, but also truly be happy. And I thank goodness for every single day that I get to live now as I truly am. It's such a gift.
Wow. And for those out there, this is something that you do discuss in the book, which is one of the reasons why I was very comfortable in asking it, but also it's the message that I wanted everybody out there to hear. This is exactly what you said. We all have a gift, and when you're in that place to where you're numbing yourself with a drug, or you are doing things that you know is not authentically you, but you're doing it for someone else, or to try to stay in a situation that maybe isn't right for you, or whatever it is, the freeing part of what you did by going back and saying, I need to be who it is that I am, that was the part that you so eloquently shared that I really wanted everybody to hear. So thank you for that. You know, it's just wonderful. We have another listener question that has come in. This one's interesting in the sense that it says, I know this may be a bit off topic, but we purchased a goat to be a companion to our stallion, who has calmed down tremendously since the goat arrived. It says, but this little clown is into mischief as well. He crawled out of the horse fence and has decimated both our flowers and our vegetable garden. When we caught him eating the leaves off of our lawn bushes, and more recently, he got into the chicken feed bin. We would like him to stay with the stallion in the pasture. Our vet finds this amusing. do you have any suggestions for dealing with our escape artist goat? Because we love having them there, but we do want him to do his magic with the stallion, not necessarily eat the property. And this is from Jonathan in San Diego.
Hey, Jonathan. Oh, my God, that goat sounds really funny. And yes, I do have some advice. I think that you need some goat fencing, I think, will help. Goats are very mischievous, and they love eating different things. Yes, if there's a garden nearby or some trees nearby, they are going to take full advantage of it. And the fencing for a horse is with larger openings than the fencing for a goat. So, I mean, if you just take some no-climb wire, and doesn't have to be very tall, actually. It could only be, you know, maybe 4 feet tall. But if you put that wire on the horse corral fencing, it should keep your little goat in with his stallion friend, and your garden should be safe. And the garden is frustrating for you when they eat it, but very enjoyable to the goat. But the chicken feed actually can be fatal for goats.
Ooh.
So it's actually very important that you make sure he doesn't get into the chicken feed, because that could really hurt him.
All right. Well, and as I'm looking at the time, I want to touch on, I think, two main points, which is, you know, what are some of the things that you can recommend that all of us as parents can do to raise our children to have more empathy, you know, and continue to fill them with love? And secondly, what can we do to help? You know, and you're having your 20th anniversary. For the parents out there, obviously, you know, there are, you know, you have three locations, but not everybody's going to be close to either Los Angeles, you know, or St. Louis. you know, what can they do to get more involved, you know, or obviously, or in Nashville, but how can they get involved? What can they do to help you help all of us?
Yes, thank you. I love those questions. So the first one is my favorite topic. I think that we live in a world that has a lot of achievements that we need to strive towards being acceptable. Like we have to get good grades and we have to behave in social circles. And we, you know, there's an expectation on many of us. We have to go off to college. We have to get a good job where we're getting paid a lot of money. You know, there's all these societal subliminal rules that we live by, and it creates enormous pressure on our children to perform and to be and to deny who they really are. And that can lead to a very unhappy life, like I was sharing with you earlier. Mm-hmm. I think the most important thing we can do as parents is to realize that we are actually not here to teach our children. Our children are here to teach us. Our children know who they are, and they know why they've come. And if we just simply follow their interests, support them in their endeavors, and let them lead the way, we will end up with very confident, self-assured, fulfilled, joyous human beings that will be able to really live their destiny. It's when we get in the way and start telling them who they're supposed to be, that's when we get into trouble. So if we could just honor them, their souls, their journey, and their path, support them where they lead us, everything else will work out great. And then the second question is, there's many ways that people can support our work with children and animals at gentlebarn.org. But one of my favorite ways is to sponsor an animal, especially when people are nowhere near any of the three locations. People can go to gentlebarn.org, click on animals, and they can read the animal's stories and see their pictures. And then when they find one of their favorites because of their mischievous face or the kind of animal they are or their compelling story of resilience, they can pick their favorite animal and sponsor that animal for a monthly nominal donation. The funds go to enabling us to take care of our 200 animals. It enables us to have the confidence to bring in more animals that have nowhere else to go, so they're saving lives. And the people get a regularly emailed behind-the-scenes update of how their animal is doing with a brand new picture each month. So they can be intimately involved in the life of an animal for that animal's life. And it makes a great gift for any animal-loving person, and especially a great gift for a child. You can sponsor an animal for that child. And then every month the updates come in. You can read the updates. You can put their pictures on the refrigerator or, you know, share it with your friends. And then everybody can say, I have a cow or a horse or a goat or a pig or a chicken.
I love it. Ellie, I really want to acknowledge you and thank you for what you're doing. You know, one of those beautiful souls that is out there making a positive difference in the lives of others. And just keep up the good work.
Thank you so much. It was such an honor to be here. And you're one of those souls too. So thank you for having me.
Thank you for that. And now for everybody out there, please be sure to put on your calendar and tune in next Monday when we'll be joined by Peter Callahan to discuss From Surviving to Thriving, How Mindfulness Saved a Recovering Jerk. So that title alone should make you want to figure out where he's going to go with that. And please visit our archives of past interviews at answersforthefamily.com or subscribe to our show through iTunes, Stitcher, or however you choose to listen. If you like what you hear, please leave a review. It will help us reach more people. And the next time that you're on Facebook or Twitter, please remember to stop by our page. Check out some of our latest posts. If you like them, please like us and continue to spread the word. If you are driving during this, and you want to get more information on The Gentle Barn, you can go to www.justgentlebarn.org. If you're driving, go to the Answers for the Family site. We will make sure that we have that information on there for you. So for everybody out there, be good human beings and be with us next week on Answers for the Family.
You're listening to Answers for the Family with Alan Cardoza. right here on LA Talk Radio.